Joining us on the program, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant from London, Ontario, who talks to us every couple of weeks about how to eat and live better. And I imagine it was with some interest you followed the government's report the other day about, you know what? Here's how we get our kids to be healthier. Stop marketing them junk food. That's enough. I know there were other recommendations in there, but it seemed to me that was the one that got all the attention. And it just seemed to me, hey, parents, how about you just feed your kids better? How about you just say no to junk food rather than cut off? Listen, advertising's not great. However, why can't parents just say no?
I'm a big believer in telling and showing people essentially what to do rather than saying what not to do. You know that analogy that they use when you see a kid running around a pool, you don't tell them don't run, because if they hear run, they'll just run. So you tell them what not to do. You tell them what to do. You want to tell them the outcome that you're looking for, which is to walk around a pool, not run, right?
Well, that's an interesting analogy.
So when you're trying to get people to eat healthy, I think it's more important to tell them what to do versus what not to do, because I think you're going to have better outcomes, essentially. And right in the report, there's two sentences, Tom, and I pointed this out to you in an email, which tell us what to do. Two sentences I found when I was scanning the report.
But buried in there are these two sentences.
Two sentences. As a culture, many of us have fallen out of the pattern of family meals where we know the ingredients in what we eat and have more control over portion size. Family meals help establish healthy eating behaviors and decrease the risk of unhealthy weight gain. So there's two sentences in telling us what to do.
Right.
And what those sentences are telling us is when we sat down and ate three square meals per day, and this was what we did before World War II, because this habit essentially started disappearing after World War II. Before World War II, we sat down and ate three homemade meals a day. And back in that era, of course, we didn't have things like butter phobia, fat phobia, cholesterol phobia. We didn't have those food phobias. And that's when we were healthy, and that's when we didn't have an obesity epidemic. So the answers are very, very simple, Tom. It's just this whole 60-page report is clouded with all sorts of words that are not going to target the real cause of obesity or show us true solutions to the problem.
Now, here's where you and I may diverge a bit, but may not. The differences may be on the surface only. Because you always reference, look at what our ancestors did, right? You always, you know, you're from Northern England, Scotland. Look at, this is what my ancestors ate. This is what our body can eat. This is how we, but also when we look at pre-World War II, we also behaved differently. We walked a lot more. We had to do so many more things by hand or by foot, so to speak. I mean, before the turn of the 19th century, no one had central heating in their house other than a fire. No one had central air conditioning. We had to walk everywhere. We had to do everything by hand, which I believe because of our sedentary lifestyle today, which everything is a machine doing it. I get in a machine to drive to work. I look at a machine all day. I go home. My clothes are washed by machine. I cook my, you know, dinner in a machine, and then I entertain myself by looking at a machine. We've become so sedentary as well.
But the key thing in this is that what's coming first, the chicken or the egg? Is the sedentary behavior leading to obesity, or is it food that's leading to laziness, which is leading to obesity? And you see, there in the movie The Men Who Made Us Fat, in part two, Tom, there's a professor there that's featured, and his name is Terry Wilkin. And he proved that, and through research, he proved that children are no less active today than they were 30 years ago, and that it's essentially food that's leading to the inactivity. It's the processed food that is causing kids to be lethargic, which is causing them not to do their exercise. Now, what happened with Professor Wilkin and his research is when he presented his data to the Department of Health, they ignored his data, and they actually cut his funding in 2005 when he suggested that it was the food that was the real problem and not the fact that inactivity is in and of itself leading to obesity. This is something that the universities, the media, the government will not embrace. And that's essentially what the problem is that we're just not getting the truth about this. So again, his research proved that children are no less active today than they were 30 years ago. So we can't be looking only at exercise as the cause of obesity. And that's the pervasive message that we hear about from, the experts, if you will. So I think and if you see the movie, Again, the name of this documentary that I just cited from is called The Men Who Made Us Fat. But if you watch the documentary Killer at Large, you will see that there's an orchestrated effort between lobbyists and government to withhold this information from us that is telling us that it really is processed foods that is leading to the problem behind obesity. And it's very well laid out in the documentary. But I think that exercise is important. I'm a big fan of exercise, but it's being used as a red herring to distract us from blaming big food.
All right, fair enough. Only because right next to the study, the story in the Toronto Star about the Healthy Living Report, which I'm like, oh, give me a break. What was that? Was this other report, according to new research, that 99% of children in the Greater Toronto Area aren't getting enough exercise? That they're not even getting close. And even though we've had a reduction in calories since, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, we have an increase in obesity. That even though we eat far less, it's also we do far less. We do far less than ever before.
Well,
so maybe the two were...
Professor Wilkin showed that children are just as active today as they were 30 years ago. If you watch, and I would encourage you to watch that documentary, because it shows how they measured, you know, structured, unstructured activity. Even unstructured activity, children are just as active today as they were 30 years ago. So, but again, his research was ignored because exercise is a powerful, powerful red herring to distract us from looking at food as the true cause of inactivity. Because if kids are lethargic, they're not going to want to exercise. And if they're lethargic because they're eating the wrong kind of calories, then you know, that's the true cause. That's the precursor to the problem.
And
but
one of the
mentioning calories, of course, this is another thing that they're talking about in the report that is antiquated, that they're talking about counting calories and somehow that's miraculously going to help this obesity crisis. And we have been counting calories now for decades, and it's clearly not working. And they don't differentiate between good calories and bad calories. They're just sort of putting everything under one umbrella and not differentiating, say, for example, the good calories that you would find in something like butter or red meat or eggs versus the bad calories that you might find in a chocolate bar or some, you know, high sort of wheat-based food, pastry, bagel, whatever the case may be. So what they need to do is educate people about the differences between calories. And when we are eating too many carbohydrates in the diet, this is in and of itself going to dysregulate our hormones, which will indeed lead to obesity. And if people learn more about these damaging calories, that's another great solution to the problem. But that's not what the government is doing here.
And to back up that point as well, though, oftentimes people in the exercise or bodybuilding industry will often say, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. No matter what you do, if your diet is bad, and to back up the point of, you know, the professor, that if they're active enough, it's the bad diet. That people, you know, oh, I can't believe I'm doing this program and I should be losing this weight. It's like, your diet's terrible. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you do. It's mm-hmm. your diet.
Well, and a lot of people who are exercising are following a high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet. They think that lots of grain, fruits, and vegetables is a healthy diet. And it's not a healthy diet. That's a diet that's going to lead to dysregulation of blood sugar. It's going to starve the brain. It's going to drive things like insulin, which drives fat. Okay, so that's the misinformation. It's very dangerous misinformation that's out in the you know, exercise world, if you will.
46 minutes after 11 o'clock, quick break in the program. Our nutritional consultant, Pam Colleen, joining us on the program, talking to us about the big distraction. We'll talk more to Pam after this on 610 CKTV. 51 minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTV. Nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joining us on the program. Ontario doctors, encouraged by the obesity report, No Time to Wait, the Healthy Kid Strategy. Pam, in the report itself, are there things where you believe there are some decent recommendations for people to take? Out of the whole 23 recommendations, are there some ones where you would say, yeah, that's pretty good?
Well, I think the one we talked about earlier is the most important one, and that is to return to eating 3 square meals a day. The rest of the report really is just a lot of words with very little solution in them. And let's not forget, Tom, the definition of insanity. What's the definition of insanity? It's to keep doing what we're doing and expect different results. We have been getting nutritional information from our government now for about 70 years or so, and we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before. Clearly, the answers are not coming from government recommendations. We have to start looking at common sense. because the government is not looking at common sense. Before World War II, when we ate a diet that was consisting of about 70% of the calories from animal fat, that's when we were healthy. That's when we didn't have an obesity epidemic. But unfortunately, the report alludes to Canada's Food Guide, and Canada's Food Guide endorses eating 10% of our calories from saturated fat, which is diametrically opposed to a healthy diet. The report also talks about Breakfast for Learning programs, which is a program that's endorsing a very high carbohydrate diet for children. So this is going to lead to more diabetes, more obesity, more mood problems. So really, that report is a disaster waiting to happen.
You have to be encouraged, though. Two solutions they include. They talk about maternal health, which, you know, which is good, and buying local, which you've always talked about, being closer to your food source.
Right. But in buying local, they don't mention nutrient-dense foods. They're talking about fruits and vegetables. And the fruits and vegetables are okay, but they're not going to solve the obesity epidemic. What we need to return to is animal fat, nutrient-dense foods like animal fat. I mean, we have a government here in Ontario that says that, you know, chocolate milk is a nutrient-dense food. I mean, they don't know the first definition of what nutrient-dense means. We need to reintegrate the foods that our ancestors ate in our diet, that they didn't have butter phobia, egg phobia, red meat phobia, you know, chicken skin phobia, gravy phobia. They didn't have any of these food phobias, and they were healthy. But our government says these foods have joined the dark side, and they're absolutely wrong about that.
What would you have recommended, first of all, if you were given the task of writing this report? What would you then, what would be your primary message? Where the primary message I got from this was, it's the marketing that is the main focus of the media has been, it's the marketing of junk food that has been the killer. What do you think the main focus of the report should have been?
I think one solution could be lying in the fact that community kitchens, where people get together and they're taught how to make food from scratch, they're educated about the importance of nutrient-dense foods, properly educated in that area. I think something like community kitchen, if they're going to spend $80 million trying to solve this obesity crisis, some of that money could be dispersed and create community kitchens teaching people how to make nutrient-dense foods three times a day, to return to the way we used to eat when we ate family meals, homemade meals, and I think that's where the money should be going. But it's, again, education is a gray area, because the government is using the wrong information to educate us. We need the correct information. And so, I mean, I'm happy to teach the government about the importance of nutrient-dense foods. I'm happy to go and teach at the universities to show them the importance of nutrient-dense foods. But I just don't think that they're ready to embrace that as yet, because there's just too much influence coming from lobbyists, from, say, the wheat and the corn lobbyists out there, where they're promoting, you know, this high carbohydrate, low fat diet.
But don't we also see bigger trends in society that influence our ability to eat? For instance, when we were in pre-World War II, as you like to call, you know, a classic time in our healthy diets, if you will, according to you. Isn't it also a one income family, where the primary breadwinner, usually the husband, would go out and the woman would be at home, and she could have time to cook those meals, which is a great reminiscence back. But in terms of today, it's tough. We're all over the place. I got kids to shuffle around. My wife is working. I'm busy. I don't have time to sit down and cook this meal. My time is at a premium.
Let me explain something from the book, Something from the Oven by Laura Shapiro. When post-World War II, when women were more or less doing the shopping and the cooking and so on back then, when they took on jobs post-World War II, they were surveyed. And these were, you know, very comprehensive surveys that were done post-World War II. And they were asked if these working women had time to cook meals and if they enjoyed cooking meals from scratch. Over 90% of them, Tom, even working women back post-World War II, said that they enjoyed making meals from scratch and that they made the time to make meals from scratch. And then the food industry was in a panic after these surveys came out. And they said, oh, dear, how do we reprogram women so that they buy all of these newfangled foods that they were then starting to produce on the marketplace? So what they did was they financially influenced the newspapers and the women's magazines at the time. They developed advertising strategies to basically brainwash women to believe that if they bought these newfangled foods, that they would be more progressive, more modern as housewives, and that cooking, and part of the messaging was that if they did cook meals from scratch, that it would be beneath them. And so that's what happened, Tom. It was a very clever, very well thought out brainwashing campaign to distract us away from making meals from scratch, and then to force us or manipulate us essentially into buying these newfangled foods, which have essentially led us to this health crisis that we're seeing today.
All right. Once again, the YouTube video is called?
Well, there's two that I cited. One is called Killer at Large.
Okay.
And the other one is a three-part series. It's a BBC series called The Men Who Made Us Fat. And the professor I talked about is featured in the second part of that series.
Okay. So Killer at Large and The Men Who Made Us Fat, both recommended by Pam Colleen to better understand what's going on in what we eat and the food system surrounding us.
That's right.
Always a pleasure talking to you. Have yourself a terrific Wednesday.
You too. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Pam.
Take care.
58 minutes after 11 o'clock. Quick break on, well, my show's done, but just a quick break, and then it's Joe Cahill coming in next.